Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform the classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we explore on this podcast. Today, we're going to look at something that I've called vintage innovation. And it's actually a term that a friend of mine can't stand because she says it reminds her of things that are spray painted gold and whatnot. But anyway, we're going to be talking about this whole idea of vintage innovation. And I want to start out by something that just barely even connects to teaching and learning, and it's baseball stadiums. So, the Houston Astrodome was a modern miracle. It was a space age wonder with this glass dome, high-tech air conditioning, and the world's biggest scoreboard, at least at the time. And when it opened in 1965, reporters dubbed it the eighth wonder of the world. This was the future. No more bad weather or quirky dimensions or anything else that made baseball messy and unpredictable. With the largest Jumbotron around and the trendiest color scheme, which was a nice mustard-colored yellow and a god-awful color of orange or maybe burnt sienna, it had a very modern, symmetrical design, and it embodied every aspect of the space age. This was the anti-Fenway, or the anti-Wrigley Field, which were, at the time, the oldest existing baseball parks, and, well, I guess they still are. But this was different. This was the ballpark of the future. But here's the thing. Within minutes of the first pitch, people noticed a fatal flaw in this stadium's design. A simple pop fly nearly blinded the players, so they had to paint the ceiling tiles black in response. And then this in turn killed the grass, which led to the patented AstroTurf, a smooth, clean-looking, easy-to-manage fake grass that added to the futuristic feel of the stadium. And if you grew up in the 1980s like I did, you probably remember that mint green carpet that used to pass as a baseball field. Unfortunately, this AstroTurf led to career-ending injuries for the players, and it honestly kind of ruined the game for a while. By the mid-1980s, nearly every Major League Baseball team had built the same style of stadium. It was massive, it was modern, and it was shaped like a donut. And you couldn't tell if you were watching TV which place you were watching a game in. It could be Three River Stadium or Riverfront. It didn't matter. They all looked the same. But the architects in Baltimore, right there in the mid-80s, had a different idea. Oriole Park in Camden Yards would be different. It would be quirky, it would be creative, connected to the community, and built with the players and fans in mind. When the team's owner pushed back and wanted a multi-purpose stadium that could house both baseball and football, the team president, Larry Lucchino, pushed back and he said this: "Let's look at the most successful baseball franchises out there. The Yankees in Yankee Stadium, the Cubs in Wrigley Field, the Red Sox in Fenway Park. And what do they have in common? They all played in a baseball-only facility. A facility that was designed for baseball and did not compromise architecturally for any other sports." End quote. Now, the architectural team chose to look backward in order to look forward. Their vision was an old-fashioned traditional baseball stadium with a modern set of amenities. They borrowed ideas from Ebbets Field and Shy Park and Polo Grounds and Forbes Field and all these other stadiums that had been forgotten in the modern era. Instead of building with a clean slate at the edge of the suburbs, they designed the ballpark in the heart of the city. And instead of bulldozing this enormous old B&O warehouse, they repurposed it and they incorporated it into their design. They didn't build around it. They made it a centerpiece of what they were doing. And similarly, the odd-shaped plot of land contributed to the quirky dimensions and unique sightlines that makes Camden Yards what it is. In other words, they embraced limitations and they actually treated barriers not as things that you move around, but as features in their final design. In the end, they had a cozy ballpark with a view of the city skyline and an atmosphere that felt timeless, and it still does. Decades later, Camden Yards has already lasted longer than the Astrodome, and it's still relevant. It's still one of the best places to watch a game. Now, there's no guarantee that the Orioles are going to be any good, and sometimes their fans are fickle, but Camden Yards as a location is a pretty sweet place to watch a game. And it was the start of a bunch of stadiums that are like that. Now, some of them have done it well, some of them have not done it well, but I think of AT&T Ballpark in San Francisco that embraces the same idea of vintage innovation, incorporating old ideas and approaches into a new design in a way that proves timeless rather than being futuristic. So what does this mean for project-based learning? Why did I tell a ridiculously long story about Camden Yards? Well, here's why. I want PBL to be less like the Astrodome and more like Camden Yards. Here's what I mean. Number one, remember that relevance starts with purpose rather than novelty. The Astrodome was futuristic, but Camden Yards and AT&T Ballpark are sustainable and classic. They borrow from old ideas and mash those up with new concepts and research-driven approaches. So when I think about PBL, it means you might do things that are a little old school. You might have a mentorship program that borrows from the old idea of apprenticeships. It means that you might do something like content curation, borrowing from a really old idea of curation. It means that you are embracing old school tools, and maybe they're building prototypes with duct tape and cardboard. Or it might mean that you're doing sketchnoting and actually drawing things out by hand. Number two, and that fits into this next piece, embrace old ideas, tools, and practices. We tend to think of PBL as being tech-driven, but it should be human-driven and then tech-informed. Number three, view the challenges as design opportunities. Some of the best aspects of Camden Yards are things that they initially viewed as problems, but this pushed them as designers and architects to use divergent thinking and repurpose the box rather than being forced to think outside the box. The same is true of PBL. You might have standards and a curriculum map, limited time, all of those things that feel like a pain in the neck, but those are often the very thing that you need to put together an amazing project. Those might just be opportunities. And finally, number four, connect to the community. Camden Yards was the first ballpark since Wrigley Field to incorporate the outside community into the internal design. And the same is true of great project-based learning. My friend Trevor Muir did this really cool project with his students, and I loved it. It was so cool. They interviewed World War II soldiers. They videotaped it on their cell phones. And that was honestly a great example of connecting to the community. The power was not in the technology. The power was in the storytelling. Now, did they still use technology? Absolutely. But it wasn't a tech project. It was a human project, and that was the cool part of it. So I want to end with this last idea, the power of vintage innovation. Camden Yards and AT&T Ballpark are both vintage, but they employ modern engineering principles. For example, they don't have any poles that reduce sight lines. Instead, they use modeling software to guarantee better sight lines for the fans. They have optimal viewing in those locations. And these ballparks work because they are a mashup of the old and the new. And that is the idea of vintage innovation. You have vintage on one hand, modern on the other, and the middle zone between the two parts in that Venn diagram. That is vintage innovation. You may use new tools and technology and take old ideas, or you may take a new idea and use aspects of old vintage technology. But in the end, that intersection is where you have vintage innovation. You see it with hands-on maker spaces that use duct tape and cardboard, and or in classes where they're doing their own sketch notes. It's a reminder that innovation is about creating something different, not something new. It's about being relevant, but that sometimes relevance is disruptive. Sometimes it's an old idea that is suddenly relevant in our time because we've forgotten about it. sometimes relevance isn't a deep dive into the augmented reality or artificial intelligence. Sometimes it's a deep dive into a novel or a meandering philosophical discussion. T.S. Eliot put it this way: a good poet will always borrow from authors remote in time or alien in language or diverse in interest. And I love that idea. I think that's at the heart of good PBL and design thinking. And I want to point out that this is not meant to be nostalgic. I'm not a curmudgeon. I promise you that. There are certainly horrible things in the past that we don't want to repeat. And there are some horrible things in the past that seem to be coming back in dangerous ways, including things like racism and alt-right and whatnot. But this is more about the idea that there are vintage tools and vintage ideas that are more relevant now than ever before. In the EdTech drive toward collective novelty, we often miss out on the classic and the vintage. And in a world heavily shaped by technology, students who are able to embrace these vintage ideas are often innovative because they are different. The thing that makes them seem maybe less relevant ends up being the very thing that makes them relevant. And I want to end with this. In a world of constant change, students will need to be divergent thinkers. In a world of artificial intelligence, students will need to be philosophers. In a digital world, students will need to use analog tools. In a connected world, students will need to be empathetic and remember the power of human connection. In a world of instant information, students will need to be curators. In a globalized world, students will need to embrace the local. In a world of virtual reality, students will need to study nature, an idea we talked about before in this concept of biomimicry. In a distracted world, students will need to know how to engage in deep, uninterrupted work. In an automated world, students will need to engage in physical prototyping. In a world of infinite possibilities, our students will need to be curious. This is not either or, this is the idea of both. This is the idea that the very things students need to be relevant are some of the oldest ideas around. Thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoyed this, would you do me a favor and leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher? Again, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.